quite a large majority thought that the biggest lessons from the war was that the United States should not be in the business of nation building.
Americans want more diplomacy. It's Thursday, October 7th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Afghans continue to resettle in the U.S. Business bust and boom in Asia. Avatars for the metaverse. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A new national survey conducted by the Eurasia Group Foundation is finding that most Americans say they want more diplomacy and fewer U.S. military deployments around the world. The findings come in the first large-scale opinion poll conducted since the end of the 20-year U.S. involvement in Afghanistan. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has details.
With the last U.S. troops leaving Afghanistan in August after 20 years, President Joe Biden told the United Nations that the United States is pivoting from an era of relentless war to an era of relentless diplomacy. A new national survey of 2,000 U.S. voters finds that most Americans appear to agree. A majority of those polled by the Eurasia Group Foundation want to decrease the number of U.S. troops stationed overseas and reduce security commitments abroad, while 58% say they want to increase U.S. diplomatic engagement. Caroline Gray is a lead researcher on the survey.
And we found that 62%, quite a large majority, thought that the biggest lessons from the war was that the United States should not be in the business of nation building, or that it should only send troops into harm's way if vital national interests are threatened.
The report notes among younger voters, ages 18 to 29, 80% believe that unless the United States is under attack, the president should be required to seek congressional approval before ordering military action overseas.
65% of younger Americans want to revive nuclear negotiations with Iran. They're more skeptical of America increasing its military presence in East Asia to counter a rising China. And a majority of them also want to scale back U.S. defense spending. So they're a lot more likely than their older counterparts to want to scale back America's military posture and reliance on the military in solving global challenges.
Americans appear divided on the best approach to China and Russia, according to the survey, with 40% saying they are unsure about what the U.S. should do if China were to invade Taiwan. This appears to contrast with what one expert said is the bipartisan consensus among U.S. foreign policy leaders.
I think in the security realm, Washington, D.C., as you well know, is obsessed with China as a rising competitor. The president himself has talked very often about this era that we're moving in, an era of great power competition, an era of democracy versus autocracy. And a real concern that China, as an autocracy that has a lot of resources and a clear plan and intentionality to dominate kind of the global discussion.
The survey found that humanitarian aid, disaster relief, and COVID-19 relief are the most popular types of international assistance, while military assistance and weapons sales are the least popular. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
You can dive into much more in this story by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and at our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Envoy says ASEAN discusses excluding Myanmar junta chief from summit. French senators arrive in Taiwan amid tensions with China. Biden's national security advisor meets with ranking Chinese diplomat. Australia urged to boost military cooperation with Taiwan. Why Chinese weapons exports are declining despite loyal clientele. Expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more can be found daily. Visit us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and stop by our website, voanews.com. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Let's continue with VOA Asia. Many who fled Afghanistan during the U.S. troop withdrawal are now located at U.S. military installations across the country. They're waiting for resettlement to host communities. As VOA's Kane Faribault reports, donations and support for Afghans continue to pour in, while aid organizations are preparing to help them find housing and jobs.
When Kyle Vandenplas heard Afghans were coming to Fort McCoy, not far from his Wisconsin home, he immediately jumped into action.
As soon as I read the email, within 10 minutes, I had all my information down and I was signed up and ready to go.
Vandenplas volunteers with Team Rubicon, which is coordinating collection and delivery of donations and supplies pouring in for nearly 13,000 Afghan immigrants temporarily housed by the U.S. military at Fort McCoy.
They need basic necessities. Right now we're processing through diapers and feminine hygiene products and baby food and clothes by the trash bag full and getting it sorted and getting it distributed to the people in need.
Fort McCoy is a temporary processing location. Only about 400 Afghans will stay in Wisconsin. The rest will resettle in other host communities, such as Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
We are preparing to do our best receiving families.
After working for the U.S. Embassy in Kabul, Norhul Haq Fazli left Afghanistan in 2018 on a special immigrant visa, or SIV. He is the only Afghan working for Jewish Family and Community Services, or JFCS, one of the agencies tasked with helping Afghans find housing and employment when they resettle in Pittsburgh. Fazli doesn't yet know the total number coming or when.
The problem is that we get a very short notice, maybe 5 hours, like we had the last week, 5 hours notice, a family comes, so you have to deal with that. So usually it was a month to do all this preparation, but now 5 hours.
Because this is a crisis situation, this is very different than the way things are typically handled.
JFCS President Jordan Golan says despite the rapid and chaotic evacuation of Afghans, any concerns about potential security risks to America are overblown.
Special immigrant visa holders, the SIVs, they're pretty similar to refugees. They're a special class of immigrants that undergo the most rigorous screenings of any immigrant that comes to this country. They have to be cleared by the State Department to come here, but before that, they go through multiple levels of screenings, which include health screenings, security, background checks. It's a very lengthy process. We know more about them when they come here than we do probably about pretty much anyone else who comes as a tourist or a student or anyone else.
The Afghan guests that are here have been vetted by, you know, our government, and they worked alongside us overseas and sacrificed a lot.
Sacrifices Vandenplas understands well. Kane Faribault, VOA News, Sparta, Wisconsin.
Now on VOA Asia, commerce grinds to a halt in Afghanistan while movie cars move at auction. Chris Keskeo joins us with VOA Asia Business Scene.
Traders of carpets, antiques, and souvenirs on Kabul's famed Chicken Street said business has completely dried up since the vast majority of foreigners left the Afghan capital as the Taliban took over. The once bustling hotspot, where aid workers and adventurous tourists would shop for vintage tribal rugs, poetry, and metalware, is almost empty of visitors looking for a bargain. Carpet seller Abdul Wahab.
People are moving, but there's a feeling of uncertainty. They really don't know what's going to happen in the near future.
Wahab said most of his customers had been expats, such as NGO staff and diplomats, but almost all of them evacuated by the end of August, after the Taliban stormed to power in the weeks before. Vintage rugs can fetch thousands of dollars, which means only foreigners and the richest of Afghans are Wahab's target market. Asked how many rugs he now sells per week, the dealer said, "Now it's none." Chicken Street was hugely popular in the 1960s and 70s among Kabul's hippie trail visitors, who stayed in nearby guest houses and shopped for clothes and hashish. Tourism plummeted during and after the Soviet-Afghan War that started in 1979, but the street experienced a rebound after the U.S. invasion in 2001. A rare auto auction recently took place in Australia, selling a menacing fleet of vehicles from Mad Max Fury Road. It was a chance for would-be marauders or those just wanting to raise eyebrows at the drive-thru window. Senior classic car curator at Lloyd's Auctions, Jeff McHugh, had this to say about the collection.
It's amazing. When I saw it start for the first time, I wasn't sure if I was having a heart attack or a bowel movement. It's madness just seeing it.
Among the vehicles was the gargantuan War Rig, a hulking tanker driven by Charlize Theron's character, Furiosa, and the Razor Cola, which went up against Tom Hardy's Mad Max Rokitansky. The vehicles are part of an armada of wild machines that burst onto the screen in the award-winning Fury Road, the fourth film in George Miller's Mad Max franchise. The movie's success further cemented the cult status of the Australian action series and its title character, first played by Mel Gibson in 1979. Once again, Jeff McHugh.
The first time I saw him, I'm pretty sure I heard one of the cars saying, "I need to be driven in anger." These cars are built to be driven in anger. They need to be out there and respected and honored.
The sale aroused interest worldwide, including from Las Vegas casinos and the Burning Man Festival, McHugh said. Sadly, none of the cars are street legal. For Business Scene, I'm Chris Cascajo.
A company in suburban Washington, D.C. is using cutting-edge technology to create lifelike video avatars to drop into music and training videos, games, and other immersive environments. It's an entry point into the so-called metaverse, as VOA's Arzuma Kampore discovered while touring Avatar Dimension's new studio.
Hello, and welcome to Avatar Dimension.
At this Northern Virginia firm, a new way to blend virtual and physical realities is taking shape.
The viewing room features a large video wall where clients can sit and work while observing the recording session. It provides clients with the ability to preview the finished holograms together with the production team.
Ben Schwartz is the general manager at Avatar Dimension.
So this is our volumetric video studio.
The firm has the only certified Microsoft Mixed Reality Capture Studio on the U.S. East Coast, one of just five worldwide. The technology can create realistic video holograms and avatars for entertainment, training, and business videos, and more.
So our stage here is comprised of 70 cameras. They're arranged in a circle 20 feet across, all pointed inwards towards the person standing in the center. There is an 8-foot circle taped out here on the floor, which represents the usable capture space that we can record while filming.
To help me understand the process, Schwartz puts me in the circle within focus of all these cameras.
All right, ready? Here we go. One, two. And got it. Yes. Our studio captures raw data at a rate of roughly 1.3 terabytes per minute. 1 minute of processing, real-time processing, takes roughly about a day. And when we're done, we'll process just the takes that we've identified as the best ones.
Avatar Dimension Vice President Kathy Hackle wrote a book, The Augmented Workforce, about how hyperconnectivity will upend life as we know it.
Web 1.0 connected information, and you got the internet. Web 2.0 connected people, and you got social media, and that's kind of where we're at right now. And Web 3.0, kind of where we're starting to go, connects people, places, and things. And sometimes these people, places, and things can be in our real world, our physical world, or they can be in a virtual world. When I think about the metaverse, I think about almost the internet breaking free from our phones and our computers and being all around us.
Hackle sees great potential in shared virtual environment, collectively known as the metaverse.
So I think that that'll unleash in itself a lot of opportunities because we're going to engage with technology in a much more human way, whether we're in Ghana or whether we're in Singapore or New York.
The line between virtual and physical reality continues to blur. In August, Facebook Horizon introduced virtual reality conference rooms so co-workers' avatars can sit together in a conference room. Can they also go out for lunch? Arzuma Kampore, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us online, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.